This is Collier Auto Media's soundtrack, Spotlight on Jason Winnig. Jason Winnig is the owner of the Creative Workshop, classic car restoration and coach building in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You may also know him from the Motor Trend TV show, Long Road to Monterey. In this episode, Jason shares with us the importance of his craftsmen having soul for the vehicle they are restoring, the emotion he feels when a finished project rolls out, and the amazing story of the last 1921 Kissel Model 645 Speedster on planet Earth, and the 1930s actress and party girl that owned it. Enjoy this episode of Collier Auto Media's soundtrack, Spotlight on Jason Winnig. Jason, thank you very much for stopping by.
My pleasure.
Boy, you love what you do, don't you?
It can be fun. It's moments like this where it really kind of grounds you about how exciting and dynamic this hobby or sport really is.
Yeah, I spoke to Ken Gross yesterday, the writer, a Hall of Fame automotive writer, and he pointed out if you can get to the intersection in life of doing what you love and making a living at it, you got it made.
You know, it's funny. They always say, you know, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life.
Right.
But there's an interesting duality that goes on when you're behind the scenes. So I own a restoration shop. So we are on the sort of the front lines of making sure these cars make it to Pebble Beach, restoring history. Some of these cars we work with, there's one in the world or one ever built. When you're doing it, it's stressful. You put a lot more hours in than people could possibly ever understand.
Yeah.
And sometimes you could, you know, what is the saying? You lose the forest through the trees.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you come to an event and you come to a week like this and it grounds it all. So there are moments where you're actually on the front lines where it's very, very stressful and it really can just eat you up. And then there's the release at the end, which is being amongst these cars and amongst the community, and it's really incredible.
We're going to talk more about the community in two, but you bring up a great point regarding stress, okay? Because I think, how do you handle that? Because like you said, you're working on one-of-one cars, okay? That's stressful because that gets screwed up. It's not like
I put eyebrows on the Mona Lisa. Whoops.
It's not like you spilled Kool-Aid on mom's rug. You know what I mean? How do you deal with that? Is it a very methodical, take your time, planning, execution? There's a flow.
I think you nailed it. We at times of being hoity-toity call ourselves forensic restorers.
Yeah.
Where there's process and there is real thought and real energy. Certainly there are moments, and I can be very specific, like when putting a windshield in a car where you just had it, the one-off windshield remade with the proper pinch marks and the proper etchings, and it's a six-month lead time to get another piece of glass. And any man who's ever put, or a woman who's ever put glass into a classic car, they break for reasons that sometimes the gremlins only can answer.
Mm-hmm.
So there are moments very specifically where you feel the pressure build. A lot of it is more of a process where your heart and soul's in it and it flows. So you don't really see or feel the stress until there are moments of building, like a windshield, like when the car is, you see the deadline looming.
Yeah.
You have 10 days left before the transporter comes.
Yeah.
So it ebbs and flows, I guess, with anything.
How many people are there at the Creative Workshop?
So we employ 15.
15.
Managers and specialists with a lot of overlap.
That's where I was going with that, specialists. What is something in the shop that you do? I know you have people, like you just mentioned, the windshield. You probably got someone, that's their thing.
Yeah.
Do you have a specialization?
Well, I guess as a business owner, you would say I'm the fireman. And believe it or not, there was a great lead because you just said, how do you manage the stress?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, at least the way I run the business, I'm the captain that goes down with the ship. So when things are getting hairy, I keep a calming presence. Men, we've been through this before.
Yeah.
You're going to be fine.
Yeah.
I know it's late. I know you're tired. Slow is fast. Fast is slow. You know, kind of. In many respects, what I consider to be the most important role I have is keeping everybody
calm.
Yeah. After that, there are certainly elements of any build that I want to be involved in, so that I really can understand the car.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I'm on a field and I'm talking to judges, I'm not a book smart. I'm factual. I'm intimate smart about what's going on.
And how about the emotional part of it? Because you put so much blood, sweat, time, stress into this. Do you find yourself getting emotionally attached to a car that you're bringing back to life? Or is it, this is business and numbers, baby?
It's so much passion. there's so much heart and soul in it that you don't actually follow the business side of it. You don't actually follow the money side of it.
Mm-hmm.
I can name every car we've ever done. I can literally tell you clients and relationships we had with every single car. Every single time a car rolls out of the building and you look at it, and you say, I can't do anything more. It's ready to go. Your heart just like I'm getting goosebumps right now.
Yeah.
You know, thinking about it.
That's a tough moment, seeing that car roll out, right? It's your baby.
You know,
you spend a lot of time
what's
there.
Really interesting is you spend so much time in relationship with the clients that own the cars.
Yeah.
It becomes part of a triangulation. Like God loves triangles. You have the car, you have the client, you have us. And they're almost to the person. We become part of their family. The cars become part of our triangulation.
Yeah.
And half of the clients that I have keys to their garage. I can pick up their car whenever I need to.
Nice.
So as much as it feels interesting to send your child off to school,
yeah,
he's still your child, and you're still watching that child, and you still get the updates from the child, and you still get to share time when they come back home.
Yeah.
So it really is, and that's part of that great community that we love so much.
I definitely want to talk more about the community, because it's pretty impressive, and it's inspiring, and some of the wonderful charitable work that you're doing to progress, to ensure the future.
Yeah.
Generations are able to work on these cars. At the Creative Workshop, do you take in many mistakes? I don't have to name names. Somebody screwed up. Now it's you.
So it goes back to my management style of trying to keep everybody calm and focused. The skill set that we need to work on these cars is above and beyond the normal skill sets that you'd find in any typical body shop or any typical garage. Not saying there aren't some skilled guys there, but it's a completely different discipline. If you don't truly love cars, if you don't truly have soul for these vehicles, you really are not going to be able to be a restoration craftsman, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's too tough. You can make more money doing more basic work at a high level. There have been a lot of mistakes. There have been a lot of guys we've brought on board that see the shows, read the magazines, and even in their heart have dreamed of spending time with these great cars. They walk into our facility. It's a 100-year-old barn. It's exposed wood floors. And I've got cars like this lined up. And you could just see their eyes. But they just don't really have the soul. They don't have the heart. They don't really have the skills. And we've become very good at spotting that.
Yeah.
And respectfully distancing ourselves from that.
Yeah.
And then moving on and fighting to find that next person who does have those abilities to grow with us.
How is the fight for talent?
It's very hard.
Yeah, it's that way across the country in all fields, isn't it?
It really is.
And how do you find them?
Well, we recruit nationwide, and it's a process. You know, every single person who's ever worked at my company, I've screened. I've interviewed probably 2 times. In many instances, we fly them in and do a week tryout. I pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
And in return, I have a very nice or a very supportive company to work for. But there's still not a lot of them. And the specialty skills, a lot of these skills are anachronisms, so to speak, or arcane, where, you know, how many guys do you know how to rebuild a vacuum-powered wiper motor or lead seams on a vintage car, or let alone flame weld? When someone says they're a metal fabricator, I ask them, so have you ever flame welded before? They don't even know what flame welding is. It's oxyacetylene welding, which is a standard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and if they say yes, have you ever flame welded aluminum? Well, no, absolutely not. Well, 80% of the cars you're looking at are alloy-bodied cars from 1940 and 50 that mm-hmm. only can be handled by flame welding the aluminum. So it's a challenge.
So that they say, well, heck no, your interview's over.
I try to be a little bit more supportive, but in some respects, yes.
But your inside voice.
In my mind.
In your mind.
Yeah,
you're saying
voice.
That it's over. Okay, curious. Tell me, what's your youngest person there that works on a car?
So
I want your youngest. I want your oldest. I want to hear the gap there.
Yeah, it's a broad gap.
Yeah,
it's a broad gap. So I'll start with our eldest, but I'll lead into my youngest with purpose. Okay, my eldest is, well, I guess understandably so, probably my restoration manager, and he's in his late 50s. And then we have 2 or 3 other guys that are in that same bracket, 40 to 50, 55, where they've been doing this for 20, 30 years and whatnot. And over the course of almost 20 years, I had one guy who was in his late 70s who worked at GM during the modeling days, where I have a picture of him in black and white buzz cut modeling clay.
Yeah.
So we've seen all these spectrums. The youngest guy we have is probably 21 or 22 years old. And he's a very interesting guy because he's part of the new generation that we're all fighting very hard to support this holiday, to support this hobby. And he comes to us from the RPM Foundation.
Perfect. So that you found him through the RPM Foundation, which could you give everyone a snapshot of what the RPM Foundation does for anyone that may have never heard of it?
I'd be glad to, because it's an entity that I very proudly support and help as much as I can. Understanding the complexities of getting the right talent to work on these incredible cars, a group of concerted people got together. I won't be able to name all of them, but mostly led by Hagerty and by the LeMay Museum, which really now is America's Automotive Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And they got together and formed the RPM Foundation, headed by a wonderful woman who I'm good friends with, Diane Fitzgerald. And amongst other things, they are on the forefront of working with schools to develop curriculum, raising money for scholarships for the right kids, creating curriculum with those schools, working with different shops around the country to find shops that have what they call a mentorship approach, but also more importantly, provide real jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Not if you screw up, you're out. Mentoring, nurturing, apprenticeship type of situations where we're going to slowly fight back and get really talented people that can work with these cars going into the future.
Right here in the United States.
Right here in the United States. Through all of my years of interviewing, it's remarkable. I've gotten quite a few people from overseas, which has become very difficult to bring someone overseas just because of the way our nation has created borders, so to speak. When you talk to somebody from Germany, so to speak, for instance, they have 3 to 5 years of apprenticeship before they ever touch a tool, before they ever actually really do anything significant on a car. Here in America, we're lucky if we have somebody with 3 months of experience.
Yeah.
All of this is to help move us in the right direction.
And that being that model? European model?
Or
Japanese model, whatever?
Yeah. I wonder if
is
modern...
It still, are we still figuring it out?
We're still figuring it out.
Okay. It's a work in progress.
I wonder if modern American sensibilities could ever get to a 3 to 5 apprenticeship period.
You know, I think a young person that really wants it, you know what I mean by that? Has the desire, has the passion that you have. There's people out there. There's young people out there, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because when you see them and when you meet them, it's like oxygen.
Yeah.
It's remarkable how you could talk to 30 people and get a lukewarm kind of feeling.
Yeah.
And then you talk to one and it just comes out. It's in their eyes. It's in their... And one of the first questions I always ask is, when did you get started? And the answer, the correct answer, maybe I shouldn't lead the witness here, is I grew up in it. I'm a second generation. I'm a third generation. When I was 12, my dad handed me sandpaper when I would help him work in the garage.
Yeah.
They bleed oil.
Yeah.
I remember my dad dangling me over a 1967 420 Jaguar sedan. He was a big guy.
Yeah.
And he couldn't fit into all the nooks and crannies. He'd pick me up on my leg and hang me over the edge of the apartment and I'd stick my hand to that. Did I get it? Good job, son.
Right.
All of us in this community have memories like that.
Yeah.
Those are the type of guys we look for.
That's where they are. It's in their blood.
That's where
it is. The long road to Monterey. Some people listening may know Jason. They say, I know that voice. I've seen him. I've heard him. Tell us about that. First of all, how did it come about?
So the long road to Monterey was a show that we did with MotorTrend last year. And it was really a remarkable ride. Basically, at the beginning of last year, a year and a half ago, I got contacted by a producer from a wonderful production company called New Dominion. And they said, we've heard about you, we know about you, what do you think? And I said, in so many words, I said, well, I don't know. We are not a typical shop. This is going to be pretty serious stuff we're doing here. Mm-hmm. But if you want to go, we got to go. Because we are 6 months before Pebble Beach. We are 5 guys on this car. All hell's breaking loose. So either embed or don't. But we can't make this a 4-month development period. 2 weeks later, they were down there, embedded with us, and they literally put the cameras on with almost no direction and said, let's go. And they watched us forensically restore the last 1921 Kissel Model 645 Goldbug Speedster on the planet Earth. And from how we came to the color that is no longer existent,
mm-hmm.
to the materials, to the techniques, to the brush painting of the wood, to the painting of the body, to the upholstery, to the stitching, all of it they documented. All the way through to coming out here and mm-hmm. watching us get the car prepped in the paddock, which we're sitting right next to. The butterflies of waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
The tour, arriving in Carmel after the tour and saying we did it. Like, you know, because it's a very nerve-wracking thing when you have a car with 7 miles on it.
Right.
And it's because you ran out of time and here we are. They watched the whole thing. And watched us at Pebble, and then turned it into a 2-hour special and edit nationwide. It was a really very fun
experience. What a wonderful tool, going back to the recruitment of talent, young people especially, you know, because now I'm sure it lives online on YouTube. It's going to be around for people to see. It could motivate them, inspire them to be interested.
I would hope so. I would hope so. Right now, it almost serves more as a really fun expose of what it's really like behind the scenes. And Motor Trend, which is linked with Pebble Beach, it was actually part of their marketing last year. So as they were putting out emails and saying ways to experience Pebble Beach, for me, it was a great honor because Pebble is Pebble. And here I was, and our shop, part of that media, part of that marketing.
Yeah.
And so business or staff, wonderful. But for me, it was just one of those type of things that meant a lot to me.
Tell everyone that car again, last one on planet Earth.
So the 1921 Kissel Model 645 Goldbug, which is the nickname that it was given, which is a remarkable story, media story, a speedster. That car is considered one of the top 100 sports cars of all time. It was, if you're in 1920s and you're a Hollywood elite, you're a socialite, you're a sports figure, and you just made your first big check, and you wanted to go and drive through the Hollywood Hills,
Yeah. You
went to the Kissel dealership and bought one of these cars.
Really?
That's what they were known for. Even our car, we traced back to an actress named Virginia Brown Fair, who I didn't know who she was because of the time gap. But when we did research on her,
Yeah. There
she was. Flapper girl, 30 movies, 18 marriages. And this was, she
party
was classic.
Girl.
And she had a
party.
Bright yellow Kissel Goldbug screwing through the Hollywood Hills. It was fantastic.
How great. And what a great story. It's fun to know the history, isn't it?
It's what makes the car.
How did it come to you? Decent, bad, poor, terrible shape?
Great. You know, it's a great question. At first glance, it came pretty good. We've had cars brought to us in buckets.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this car drove in.
Oh.
And it just looked like a heavily patinaed, heavily used car. So we had this kind of stupid, you know better. You have enough experience.
Yeah.
This is going to be no problem, so to speak, right? And then, of course, you get into it and realize that the carburetor was wrong. The bumpers were wrong. The lights were wrong. The lights that were there were made out of fiberglass that someone fixed back in 40 years ago. We got to get it right. Using my poor Mona Lisa analogy, you don't just go putting eyebrows on things.
Yeah.
So this car was going to Pebble Beach, and if you respect the discipline, it's got to be right. So once we dug into the history books, the Kissel graphs, the bulletins that came out from the factory, we started to realize that this car was in not dilapidated shape, so to speak, but in heavily modified state. And there's only 30 Kissels left on the planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get the parts? How do you get the knowledge? So that's what set us off on this course.
Wow.
Lots and lots of research to get the bolts and the nuts and the screws and the finishes and the colors correct.
Now, it's not fair to ask you. It's like asking who your favorite kid is. But is that is that one up there? On
it's
your,
like asking who my favorite kid is. If I say it, I'll be forever damned.
Right. But is that one on the top of the list, towards the top?
It is for several reasons. Probably the most poignant or the most important one was this client. His father bought the car back in the early 80s, late 70s, and had it ever since. He collected interest in cars, and his grandfather, the reason why, met his wife in a Kissel. So the clan got started because of a Kissel. The father bought a Kissel in remembrance of the grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
His father passed away recently. He inherited the Kissel. So this project, this restoration, was an honor of the memory of his father. So you have this great family with direct lineage with this car and a true heartfelt connection.
Yeah.
That trumps all. So I get goosebumps again.
Yeah.
Then the process, the car, the rarity, the filming, the unveiling at Pebble Beach, the best in class we got. You can't just not remember these moments. It certainly goes down as one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Best memories.
I know you are being recognized very soon. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. But I want to go back a little bit more to the RPM Foundation.
Yeah.
And if someone's listening and they've heard of the RPM Foundation for the very first time, and they are not familiar with it in their area, and they want to get something going, should they just reach out?
Without a doubt. It is an incredibly receptive entity.
Mm-hmm.
They have a full website, and they are showing up at events everywhere. Basically, what I would say is, if you have a passion for working with automobiles and you're not sure of what path to take,
mm-hmm.
and based upon the common knowledge that's out there right now, there is any sense of being a dead end, if I love working with cars, but I don't want to work at a dealership, I don't want to work in a body shop, what am I supposed to do? I love hot rodding with my friends on the weekends. I love building cars and going cruising. I love, what do I do with this passion? What do I do with this? You contact the RPM Foundation,
okay,
and they will help you understand what you need to do to make this into a truly vibrant and viable career.
It's a wonderful organization.
It's a wonderful organization.
It's fantastic. You have a trip to Seattle planned.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
And I know you don't like to talk about yourself, but this is a big deal.
You know, after being, it's the weirdest thing to talk of your oneself in the first person.
Yes, I know. Yeah.
After doing the thing on TV, I had to get sort of used to it. I was very uncomfortable the first 6 months. And then you kind of have to force yourself because you end up always saying, well, how am I supposed to speak about what I'm doing if you don't speak about yourself? So understand, I'm very uncomfortable with it.
Right.
I got word a couple of months ago that America's Automotive Trust, which is the parent company of the LeMay Museum out in Tacoma, Washington, as well as RPM Foundation and several other group brought together to further the hobby, that I'm being awarded the 2019 Master Craftsman of the Year Award.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Now I'm going to get... I'm getting...
Get those... Yeah, do you have to give a speech?
I don't know. That's okay. I don't mind speaking in front of cameras and whatnot. But, you know, I guess my most difficult part is feeling if I'm worthy or not.
Yeah.
You know, you work really hard. You do things. But when you know the people that are associated with the museum and you know that the people that might have gotten the award... It's a little humbling, and I kind of hope that I can live up to it.
That's a big mantle to carry. You'll be all right. I got a feeling. I got a feeling you'll be all right.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Jason, thank you for coming by and visiting with us. You're a wealth of information.
I really appreciate it.
And I look forward to visiting with you again.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you. Thank you very much.